The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Christine.
Sorry, Jane. I need Jane. Hi, my name is Christine. I'm an alcoholic. Today is my 540th day of sobriety. My date is February 24th. This is my second 90 and 90, but I go to meetings every day. I'm going to be doing 90 and 90 for a long, long, long time. I have a sponsor. Her name is Jane. I have sober sisters, Long and Minnie. I want to give a shout out to Angela. Today's her third birthday. Dear Angela. And it was listening to Angela's tape the other night that, first of all, speak into the mic, okay. It was listening to Angela's tape the other night that she did her 10-minute speech in her first year. That made me realize why we do those tapes. And it was just such a powerful thing hearing her go through her story. Such sincerity, such clarity, so dear. And she just brought up some things that I really needed to hear. And one of them, and I don't hear this a lot, and so I was really happy to hear it from her, that you know, AA is not a straight line. I thought it was gonna be, but it's really not. There are bottoms. There's more than one. I've had more than one. So I'm always looking to hear my story. I never hear it. So tonight's my turn, I suppose. You're gonna have to listen to it. So, you know, my childhood was idyllic. I have nothing to complain about. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, in a beautiful white house on a hill. I had an oak tree out my bedroom window. Perfectly decorated, beautiful mommy, beautiful daddy, 3 brothers who are all alcoholic. How does that happen? You know, my dad's a doctor, mom is a mom. They spent their adult lives. This is what I would say is the source of many of the issues that, you know, my parents aren't from the East Coast. They're from Indiana. You know, my dad was raised on a farm in Indiana. He grew up, his parents, you know, were Depression-era parents. He was a Depression-era baby. He went through World War II. My mother was the daughter of a German immigrant. He was a butcher in a very small town, Southport, Indiana. They grew up in a religious household, which they violently fled, and they moved to the East Coast, which, you know, they weren't necessarily prepared for that. You know, they didn't understand the rules. They didn't understand the whole deal about it, but they brought their Midwestern values, and their Midwestern values are very, very clear. You work very hard. You never get sick. You never whine. You get married to the first person. You procreate often. You stay married, and you stay married no matter what. You know, that was the definition of their marriage, no matter how can I say this kindly, codependent it became. But one of the big issues, my takeaway from all that, and I've just been thinking about it a lot lately because I'm in therapy, is that, you know, it was that emotions weren't really the key to what was happening here. You know, it was work, it was effort. You pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You do. That's why I like AA. So my dad worked all the time, you know, 90 hours a week. He never called in sick once during his 50-year career. Mom had a beautiful house. She cooked dinner every single night. She never went out of the house without her hair done, her lipstick on. Never once to this day. So it's this notion of perfection, you know, was deeply embedded that you show a face to the public and you don't talk about your emotions ever. So this is very hard for me. You know, it's been very hard for me to even identify that I have emotions, but lately I've been having quite a few. One of the gifts of sobriety. They had four kids by age 29. It was a lot. You know, they married when they were young, 20 years old. It, you know, when I look at it now, that's really just plain ridiculous. you know, they weren't prepared. You know, they were prepared to work and do all these things and express their Midwestern values, but they weren't prepared to be adult parents. So, and they were broke because, you know, they were young. And he was going through medical practice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a lot of financial insecurity. There was a lot of arguing. There was a lot of irritability. I mean, it was all the time. Their relationship I would call, you know, very immature. So I brought that into my life. I took my first drink when I was 13, my first cigarette when I was in fifth grade. My drink was, I stole Chivas Regal from my dad, and I drank 8 shots right in a row. So, I mean, it's not like I knew anything about alcohol. I just started drinking alcoholically right from day one. It was just my go-to deal. And when I was in 10th grade, I got hit by a car, and I spent 2 months in a hospital. Strapped in a bed, and my leg was in traction, so I literally couldn't even get out of bed. And that's when the party started, because everybody in school came to visit me, you know, everybody. I had hundreds and hundreds of visitors. One boy brought me a bottle of wine every single day. You know, people brought me weed, da-da-da-da. The orderlies, the hospital staff would come to my room to party. I was party central. I knew everybody in school before I'd even stepped foot in school. And leaving the hospital was, how can I say this, interesting. I brought many, many bags of wine bottles and garbage out with me. So when I graduated from hospital, my friends decided to throw me a party. They invited 20 people, 200 people showed up. And, you know, they did things like wheelies on my front yard, and, everybody was older. It was literally, it was the whole high school, it seemed like. Not quite, but it seemed like it. You know, the police came. It was wildly out of control. And that is the start of it, because that's what high school was like. I mean, we had parties every single weekend, every single weekend. And, you know, we were spoiled, too wealthy, too this, too that. And mostly it was this, what I call the fantasy bubble, that life is fun. There's nothing hard about anything. Somebody's there to save you whenever anything bad happens. You know, as long as we got good grades, and I always did, as long as I had good friends, and I always did, as long as I did all, you know, had my job, I always earned money. I checked all the boxes, but I was partying all the time, and so was everybody around me. I mean, really, every single weekend, I got up, smoked weed in the mornings, 7:30 in the morning, all day long, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we did. But, you know, the reality was, it's not healthy. Life isn't a party. It's a lot harder than that. And I found that out when I went to college. You know, my first year, my freshman year was very hard on me. I started at BU, which was a party school, which I really hated BU. It was too much of a party school for me. Imagine that. You know, the girls partied so intensely, and they were sort of sexually promiscuous in a way that I thought was really wild. And so I transferred to Barnard, and the party stopped, because, you know, girls at Barnard do not party, ever. And so I was really distraught. I felt like I was in this extremely abnormal environment. So I basically, I didn't leave the school, but I left the campus. I got a part-time job. I studied all the time. I had a much older boyfriend. I moved in with him, and so I was completely separated from my peer group. This is going a lot faster than I thought it was going to. There's nothing special to say. I got married. I had a kid. I did. My real bottom in alcohol happened as a consequence of marriage, breaking up of marriage. This is my second marriage. And it kind of happened in a very precipitous way, unkindly, and I bottomed out. I started drinking ridiculous amounts, just insane amounts, and my family became very concerned, and they sent me to rehab. And I thought I was going to be all better. I thought, that's it. I went to rehab. Everything's okay. But, you know, that's not how it works. I came back. I did a bunch of moving around. I sold my houses. I got very sick, had a cancer scare, had some organs taken out, had the surgery went bad. I was living by myself for the first time ever. You know, I was scared, frightened, alone. And then I fell, can I finish up? All right. Well, I'm going to have to go. I didn't get to, all right. Thank you.
Tonight's second 10-minute speaker is Brad.
Hello, my name is Brad, and I'm an alcoholic. I got sober on January 29th, 2013. I have a sponsor, I am a sponsor, and I've worked the 12 steps as outlined in the big book. I am terrified right now, just to be honest with all of you. It's a very surreal moment for me because I remember very specifically about 5 years ago, before I really got into this thing, sitting up in the balcony and just, you know, I think I drank before the meeting and, you know, just really feeling so separated from all of you. And, you know, now I'm here spreading the message. So it's really just a testament to what this program can do. You know, I'm a garden variety drunk. I, you know, drink because I love the effect that alcohol has on me. I started very early. You know, as a kid, I think I took sips from, you know, my parents' drinks. I think they thought it was funny. And my first drunk actually was, I was 11 years old. I was at a Super Bowl party. And I was speaking to the mic. I was at a Super Bowl party, and the parent, you know, all of the adults were upstairs, all the kids were downstairs. Somehow we got our hands on a six-pack of Heineken, and I drank all six. And, you know, I went home and proceeded to raid my parents' liquor cabinet. So, you know, it sounds funny to us, but I drank very alcoholically from the beginning. And, you know, that's how my drinking was, you know, the... you know, once the allergy was activated, the obsession started, and I just did not stop once I started. And, you know, it was fun for a while. You know, I had a lot of good times, and it was fun until it wasn't. You know, it brought me to my knees, and, you know, in the beginning, I was, you know, the little kid in high school who was drinking with the seniors, and, you know, at the end, I was, you know, in New York, you know, doing... very, you know, basically selling my body for, you know, substances other than alcohol, you know. And it all started and ended with a drink for me. And that's important for me to say because that's not the life I live today. You know, I came in here so broken and so just alone, you know, that feeling of being alone. And, you know, I remember... towards the end, just laying in my bed at night and asking, you know, God or, you know, whatever it was, you know, to just let this be my last night. I didn't want to live the way that I was living anymore. And that's where you guys came in because, you know, someone from this program reached out to me. I had been going to meetings, you know, here and there, you know, and made a few connections. And thankfully, one of them decided to reach out to me and ask me how I was doing. And, you know, for the first moment, you know, in a while, I was able to be honest and say I wasn't doing well. And, you know, he said, why don't you just come to a meeting? You know, I thought it had to be some big ordeal. I thought I was going to have to go away. I thought I was going to have to leave the city. You know, it was so much, you know, in my head, I thought everything was done when I came here. You know, this was going to be the end of the road. But really, it's where it all began. You know, I got a sponsor. I got service commitments at meetings. You know, I started working the steps and, you know, the life that I have, today is unrecognizable from the one, that I did, you know, before I came in here. And it has been, you know, an up and down journey for me. It's been, you know, my first year was really great. I really you know, jumped into this thing and I would go to watches. If you're new, you know, these are the things that I did that really, you know, plugged me in and got me connected. You know, because this group can seem very overwhelming, and it did to me when I first came in, but you know, I got plugged in, and I you know, started working the steps. You know, the steps for me, you know, I always thought that I had a relationship with a higher power. You know, I would say foxhole prayers, you know, when I was in a jam or when I really, really wanted something, I would, you know, really be praying hard. But, you know, working on a relationship with a higher power has been, you know, the thing that saved me. You know, going through the fourth step and writing down, you know, all of my resentments and my fears and really taking an honest look, you know, at my life and, you know, talking about those things with a sponsor, you know, really gave me less of an excuse to feel so sorry for myself. And you know, that was good for me because I love an excuse to say sorry. You know, I love to say sorry for myself. I love to be the victim. You know, I play that role very well. You know, I from a very young age, I always felt different. I always felt so separated from you, you know, from the rest of the world. And, you know, what I learned in here is that, you know, I'm not that unique. You know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, and because of that, my thinking is flawed, you know, so I need this program to be able to tell me the truth about myself. And, you know, thank God that I have that because, you know, it's given me the life that I have today. You know, I'm still working on ninth step amends. I did one last night, which was really great. And just going, you know, to the people in my life systematically and really acknowledging the hurt and the harm that I've caused to them has been super powerful for me. One of the most powerful was making an amends to one of my best friends who I, you know, knew from childhood. And, you know, we drank and partied a lot together. And you know, I made the amends and, you know, gave her an opportunity to speak as well. And one of the things that she said to me was, you know, I was so scared for you. I didn't know how to help you. I didn't know what to do. And, you know, for the first time I heard that, you know, I had never considered that I was hurting anybody but myself, before that moment. And, you know, when we come in here, you know, sometimes when I came in here, I thought that nobody cared. I thought, you know, I was in this on my own and I was only hurting myself, but, you know, through making amends and, you know, clearing out the wreckage of my past, I've been able to really see in an honest way the damage that this disease has caused, you know, not only to me, but the people around me. You know, so today, you know, my life is beyond my wildest dreams, you know, and I say that because it looks nothing like, you know, I thought it would when I came in here, and that's a good thing. You know, I'm able to be employable today. I'm able to show up for friends. I'm able to show up for my family. I'm able to show up for the group. And that's really important to me because, you know, you guys have shown up for me, you know, and I wouldn't be here standing here if it weren't for this group, if it weren't for the structure of the group, for sponsorship, strong sponsorship. You know, I would have died from this disease. And it's important for me to remember that I still can. Because if I let up on the spiritual program of action, I'm right back where I was when I came in here. So, you know, it doesn't always look like a drink or a drug. It can look like my own thinking. My disease definitely demands treatment. And, you know, if it's not killing me, it will settle for me alone and miserable. So, you know, doing service, you know, meeting with sponsee, meeting with my sponsor, meeting with my sober family is really what's keeping me alive today. So, you know, I don't take this opportunity lightly, and I'm super, super grateful to all of you for being here, and thanks for letting me share my story.
And our main speaker tonight is Heidi.
Hi, everybody. My name is Heidi, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, what an honor to be here. Nye, thank you so much. We had to reschedule this like four times because, you know, I have 4.5-year-old twins, and I live in New Jersey, and there's just a lot of balls in the air to get here sometimes. I'm so thankful to be here. In case I forget, I don't think I will forget to say this, but I love you. I love you, I love you, I love you. And even if I don't know you, I love you. And that is something that AA has taught me. Actually, I do have to say, like, I was a pretty loving drunk anyway. I was like, when I drank, I was always that person that was like, yeah, let's talk about this. Let's, you know, connect. You know, it's all about connection. And the irony of that is that, hi, Peggy, is that, you know, I felt so disconnected from the time that I was a little girl. I just, my primary emotion that I remember was just feeling like I was on the outside looking in and that I just wasn't quite cutting the mustard. You know, I was, my image of myself, that the best way that sums it up is when I tried to do, we moved a lot. So we moved like every year with the hefty garbage bag suitcases and like the boxes and like the guy up the road helping us move in our Volkswagen bus or whatever car we had. And I still wanted to move that way in sobriety, but then Ava taught me, my sponsor Ava taught me to hire movers. That was a very sober thing. So let me just get this out of the way. But I always felt that way. I always felt like I was like, you know, the one kid on the, like, I played basketball for a year when I was 8, and it was like, you know, all the other girls were like, you know, knew that it was time to go for the rebound, you know, like when the ball comes back and everyone's like, you know, and I was that kid who was like, you know, I'd go over there and, you know, I'd bump into somebody, and oh, sorry, you know, and I'd like just kind of awkwardly pull up my sock and, you know, that that matched perfectly with my outfit. And, you know, it was just all about like if I could just not make anybody mad and just get everybody to like me, then maybe I would fit in and maybe, you know, maybe I wouldn't feel so sad inside, you know, and so disconnected. So I'm so glad to be here. You know, I know a lot of you. There's a lot of new faces. But I have to tell you, you know, this was my home group for 11 years. Ava has been my sponsor for 15 years. I think we're coming up on 16. And, you know, that's a long-term relationship. That's the longest relationship Ava has been the closest thing in my life that's been the most consistent, you know, besides my parents. And, you know, we've been through so much together. And this group and I have been through so much together. You know, I'm just going to say it. I feel like you guys are the whole reason that I'm coming up on 10 years married. You know, and I wasn't even, you know, I was coming off of a bad breakup when I joined this group. I was hitting another emotional bottom coming up on 10 years sober. When I found this group, I met Stephanie, and she said, oh, I go to this great group, and I was going to Al-Anon on the third floor because I'm really jumping all over the place. Let me backtrack. So I'm sober since September 3rd, 1990, and I currently live in New Jersey, as I said. I know that you have a beach date planned for the Rockaways, but there is also a lovely beach out of the Jersey Shore. My home group is on Sunday night. It is called the Design for Living Group. It's a big book study. It's a solution-focused, excited, vibrant group. They don't do things exactly the way the Atlantic group does, but it has been very good for me. The first few years, I think maybe the first couple years I was out in New Jersey, I resisted joining that group because, you know, it was just not the Atlantic group. And, you know, quite frankly, every Tuesday night I would like twitch a little bit around 7 o'clock and like wonder why I wasn't, you know, like, you know, in at 60th and Park. And it was, you know, I actually, you know, so I have 4.5-year-old twins and I moved to New Jersey 5 years ago. And, you know, there was many a Tuesday night where I would sit there, you know, in the sort of twilight, 7 o'clock, and I did go through postpartum depression, let me just say that. That's an outside issue until you're going through it. So, plus, if any issue, any outside issue that you have, once you sprinkle alcoholism on it, it just, like, takes it to a whole other level. So, you know, welcome to outside issues if you have them. They're no longer an outside issue. Just saying that. Anyway, and I would sit there on Tuesday nights and, you know, and I would cry. There was a long time where I would just sit there in my rocking chair nursing my twins and, you know, thinking, I just want to be back at Tuesday. And, you know, I have to be totally honest. It has been a big, you know, I grew up in AA, okay? I got sober 3 days after my 16th birthday, and I'm 41 now. So a lot has happened, and I've made so many mistakes and just, totally bottomed out and like, you know, just I've had to learn how to talk to people. I've had to learn how to, you know, be direct like a normal human being, you know. I had to learn to like, you know, buy shoes not on a credit card and not in some vague, you know, dysfunctional way. You know, I had to learn to like break up with someone. I had to learn to say like, are you, you know, when you ask me out for a coffee, are you, is this a date? You know, I mean, that's actually kind of a big deal. So, but, you know, I had to just learn how to have a checkbook and that people balance their checkbook and do all those, you know, even now I'm married. So I'm married to a guy who's not in AA. And he's just one of those people. I always think that he naturally, like, when he goes to close a cupboard, he makes sure that the cupboard's closed. And he naturally, like, squeezes the toothpaste from the bottom. He, you know, he puts the cap back on and then places the toothpaste back where it goes. I mean, these are all, like, mind-blowing things. And what does this have to do with alcoholism? Not a lot. But what it does have to do with is, you know, all of these things and feeling on the outside is what I drink on top of, you know, that's what I pour alcohol on top of. I'm from the West Coast originally. I got sober in a little town called Port Angeles. It's a great, if you're ever traveling in the Northwest, please go there. There's a wonderful little group called the Here and Now Group, which comes from the very last line of Bill's story, which is, you know, each, you know, those of us that feel we look no further for utopia, we have it with us right here and now. And I didn't know that until I was like 20, you know, 15 years sober, and I was in the Wednesday night big book study, and I was like, oh my God, here and now. But it's a great little group. I too, just like, thank you so much, Brad and Christine, for speaking. I too started drinking at a very early age. I grew up around a lot of alcohol. That was super important, when I first got sober. Everyone had to know about my dysfunctional family, and, you know, every family's dysfunctional is what I've learned now, and I'm so grateful to my parents. But, you know, there was a lot of raucous times, a lot of kooky ideas, a lot of, you know, behavior and scary people, and, you know, and I really learned to, I think, pretend and try to be nice, and, you know, just perform, basically, and get you to like me. And I saw that alcohol and drugs and looking good was a way to feel better. And I remember from the time I was a little child taking big drinks off of my father's drinks, and him telling me to slow down. And even then, I liked it. You know, people say I never liked the taste. I don't know if I liked the taste. I just liked the ability to do it. And when I was, my drinking was really ruined from the start, thanks to my mom, who got sober from when I was 11 for the first time. And my mom was in and out of AA for 25 years. And but anyway, she got sober for the first time, and I hadn't really started drinking like the way that we like to drink yet. But what happened is I got all this like self-knowledge, and you know, the big book says self-knowledge will avail us nothing, and self-knowledge didn't avail me anything. Go figure. Basically, you know, you get, when you go to treatment, you get, you know, your kids come to family week sometimes, and your, you know, your parents or whoever's in your life, and I saw her take a chip, and it was very emotional, and you know, I learned all these words like propensity for the illness, and like, you know, heredity, and like, you know, there's like a statistic that females are more likely to inherit alcoholism, and you know, a lot of times I hear people say like, you know, and then I vowed to never be like my mother, or I vowed, you know, I really wasn't like that for me. I just really didn't think it applied. You know, I just really was like, huh, that's interesting. Like, good for her. And you know, so already I had that that incredible alcoholic ego that like, I'm gonna be different. I'm just different. Like, I'm my own person. I felt very independent. And instead of moving in with my newly sober mom, I moved in with my dad. And for the, you know, I remember one day I just got the idea like to get drunk. And I stole alcohol from my dad. And it's funny, the other night at my home group, we were talking about the seventh tradition and how someone said something to the effect of, like, you should think about how much you spent on alcohol and then put that much money in the basket. And I was like, wow, I didn't spend really any money on alcohol except for, like, what I stole from my dad and, like, would give to my older friends, or I would just, you know, steal the out, you know, get it from people. You know, so that's pretty much my drinking. You know, I remember that first time that I drank that beer. It was very dramatic. You know, I'm very much into the drama of things, the setup. You know, I loved, you know, I took my little girlfriend, my little hostage girlfriend who couldn't have cared less about drinking, down to the beach, and we threw our heads back, and, you know, and I remember just guzzling that. And, you know, the first time I read those words, in the doctor's opinion, the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks that they see, you know, they see others taking with impunity. I did. I felt that warm feeling, and I felt like, for the first time in my life, I felt there was something that I could do just for me, that was just mine, you know. And suddenly that big bag of dysfunction and that big bag of crap that I carried around that I was so upset about and didn't have a place to put, I had somewhere to do something with, and that was through alcohol. It really, really worked for me, which is really great at first. And then there's the underbelly of alcoholism, which is the mental and spiritual part, where I have this allergy, which means that every time I drink, there were times that I drank and I did not get drunk. However, if anyone is like, well, I didn't have the phenomenon of craving every time, let me just whip this out. I really want to share this because a sponsee of mine pointed it out to me, and it's so great. It says that we believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. The phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So that means that if you've ever had the phenomenon of craving, ever, just once, like, then this program, you know, this, then you probably have alcoholism. Not you. I probably have alcoholism. I hope that makes sense to you. It's kind of a Jedi mind trick, but when I discovered that, I was like, oh, wow, that really makes sense. And I do have to say, having gotten sober young, I did spend some time, you know, my head would talk to me and say, like, well, have you really hit bottom? Because the group I got sober in was this very, like, I mean, everyone was a senior citizen, okay? Seriously. And you know what? I have to say, like, being a total dependent, like, I need you to like me so bad type of person, it was great because I got tons of attention. There were no young people. Like, I look around here and I'm probably, like, you know, 16 is probably, like, really old, compared to when a lot of people in this group get sober. You know, I was like, you know, I'd gone on way past my time at 16, you know, but back then there just wasn't anybody around, and my first sponsor was 73, and everybody called me kid, and everyone, you know, congratulated, you know, it was like every meeting I went to, the entire meeting was just like, good for you for being sober. Like, it was, all I had to do was be breathing and have a pulse and come to the meeting, and people were like encouraging me and, you know, giving me, you know, gifts and, you know, sit right here, you know, and so I felt very special all the time, which is, you know, oh God, it was, you know. And you can say, like, well, maybe that wasn't good for her, but, you know, because I have realized since in my sobriety that I've had to learn to rely on a higher power for that kind of approval and love. And it has been very challenging for me to make that transition, right, Ava? Yes, yes. I'm really hoping that she'll give me an attagirl tonight. Please, please, please. It's okay. You know, it's really, that comes from a good instinct, you know, that I want to do a good job, and that's a clever instinct. But anyway, I had a really last, basically my drinking, I bottomed out, couldn't stop drinking, making deals with myself, you better stop drinking at 15, blah, 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 couldn't stop drinking. I mean, it's the same thing that you hear in any AA meeting. It's just my story. What is equally interesting is what happened when I got sober. So the first 9 months, I was a bystander in AA. Not a bystander. I would go and I would share, because when I found AA, it was like I was home. It was like all the old hippies. And, you know, it was like the angry people. And the people were really talking about their feelings. And like really, you know, and these were the meetings I went to. And they were great. I mean, they kept me busy. They kept me identifying with the anger and the hurt. And, you know, and I mean, I loved it. And smoking a lot of cigarettes and drinking a lot of coffee. And so at about 9 months, I found myself at another spiritual bottom and, you know, literally, do you want to know what I look like untreated? Literally like punching my own face and throwing myself against walls and, you know, breaking down at school. I was in high school, so I'm a junior in high school, and one of my classes was the drug and alcohol group, which my mom was the counselor of, you know, so that was... It was a little bit, you know, kind of like weird experience, but basically I hit this bottom and I went to a meeting. I took the Burning Desire and it was the Here and Now group and the entire table. I always tell this story because I want to honor Armand. Armand was chairing the meeting. Armand just celebrated 41 years sober. And Armand didn't say to me, he didn't say, keep coming back or thanks for sharing. He looked right at me, and the whole group looked right at me, and he said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no. And he said, get a sponsor. And then he said, and we'll close in the usual manner. And I have to say, that completely made the difference for me, because as much as I can balk at structure and I can balk at directions, I feel like that's all I've ever wanted my entire life is for someone to tell me what to do. And especially when I came into AA, I mean, it felt really good to kind of be wandering around and get all this assurance and love and validation. But what I really wanted was for someone to say, kid, please do this, and to care about me enough to give me that kind of structure. And that is what I have found in AA. And the next week I met Annette, and Annette was 73. And, you know, she was on the opposite side of the spectrum. She had decided she would drink herself to death. She didn't get sober till she was 63. I got sober at 16, and we were like we were twins on the inside. I mean, exactly the same. She used to throw her arm around me, and, you know, people like when I imitate Annette. She was so full of love and just unconditional love. You know, she threw her arm around me and she was like, we're just a couple of drunks, you know, and then she'd like laugh her head off at me. And she, you know, I went everywhere with Annette. I became like her granddaughter / you know, her drunk, recovering drunk granddaughter. She took me to conferences, you know. She taught me after I graduated high school to start paying rent to my mom. Like I started paying a little rent to my mom, self-supporting. She used to pay when I was really young and new. She used to pay for my travel to these conferences. And I remember the first time she sent me a letter, even though we lived in the same town, and said, the Seven Tradition states that you owe me $150 for the hotel room. And I was like, what? But I learned through all of these things, you know, how to grow up, you know, how to grow up in AA. At about 2.5 years sober, working a program, GSR of my home group, I had to go away to a treatment center because of an outside issue. And, you know, I thank God for AA, and, you know, all these little oldsters in my home group, you know, sent me letters and tried to understand what the heck was going on with this young person, you know, going through this newfangled mental disorder. And, you know, I went away and I followed directions and I came back, went to college. You know, I only have about 10 minutes left, right? And I just want to, you know, I just want to share about a few, some very important things. You know, the steps, obviously, that's what this whole program is all about, is working and reworking the 12 steps. And, you know, there's been a great deal of change in the last 5 years of my life. Change, 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 change. This whole program is about change. And it has been challenging for me. And before coming here tonight, you know, I had a little bit of that, like, wow, everything is not perfect. And, you know, for the first, 20 years of my sobriety, it was pretty simple. You know, I didn't have children, I didn't have a husband, I didn't, you know, it was like I could just be rip-roaring on the phone all the time with sponsees and, you know, a million commitments and running around and doing this, and, you know, it was like kind of a little bit, I could just do what, you know, and I still can have AA at the forefront of my life, but I would be dishonest if I said that I have, you know, melted into this role of being a mother and not being able to run around as much and get to be, you know, out there and, you know, and I've had a lot of time to see how, you know, God has given me this beautiful, beautiful life. Like just beyond my wildest dreams. Like my wildest dreams were Janis Joplin. That's what I wanted to be. It was just famous in some vague way and have a lot of alcohol and then to be a poster in some drunk 15-year-old's bedroom. Like that's what I really wanted to be and to have great clothes. And you know, and today I'm married and I'm able to like I'm able to fix dinner for a family, you know, and you know, I mentioned my mom, and this has to do with the steps, and it has to do with amends, and it has to do with, you know, if you're new, or if you've been around, or maybe you've already gone through this, but you will hear speakers talk about these big major things that happen in their sobriety. And for me, I would hear people share about going through hardships, and I would think, oh yeah, you know, in this kind of vague way, like, yeah, that's going to happen, or, you know, wow, I can't believe they went through that. And then one day, what is so amazing is that it gets to be your turn, maybe, if we are lucky. And I feel so blessed because I mentioned my mom, and my mother is somebody that I used to share about so much because I think I spent about maybe like 22 years writing inventory on my mom, and she was always an example for me of, you know, how I have to continually have faith in the process of the 12 steps because it was a relationship that was difficult because she was in and out of rehab and went to prison and you know, she loved AA. She was a Bucky Beaver, just like me. By the way, that is my nickname, Bucky Beaver. Buck, Buckenstein, Buckmeister, the Buck, okay? So, just want to get that out of the way. And that just means that I'm excited about AA, and even when I have not felt excited, I have been excited because this is like the best deal ever. And anyway, so... I would always talk about my mother and share about her. Like, so there's, when you are sober, there's like little, each of you here has like little things that you're going to be an expert in. Like a couple of my expert areas are like, you know, being young and sober in AA and having to like go to school and do all that stuff. And then there's, I'm also like also working in food service and having to, and you know, and having to be direct about how I don't do the wine tasting, and then also dating and being incredibly vague, and you know, like sort of leading people on. That's another one. Being audited by the IRS. That's another expert area. Yep. And what else? Oh, and. Marriage. Oh, and then also having trouble getting pregnant. Let me just get this all out there. But so if anybody, you know, but these are all things that I have had the opportunity to write inventory on and to go to God with and to bring to a loving higher power. And what happens is that every single time I do, the solution works. Go figure. So my mom, so I would write inventory her on her again and again. And about 3 years ago in June, and this was like the week before she had sang at the Women's Gratitude Luncheon, the Women's AA Gratitude Luncheon, and I got a phone call that she was in a coma and on life support, and it was a beautiful sunny afternoon, and I was playing in the yard with my kids, and you know, and it just so happened that my husband happened to be home that day, and I had to call the doctor and say, like, you know, does this mean, like, life support? Like, or does it, because at that point we'd just been through so much with her that I really, you know, like, that's, it was, so, you know, I was freaked out, really. It's funny, looking at Stacy, I remember there was a time I talked to Stacy because I got some weird phone call. And you know, I just want you to all to know that I, you know, I carry all of you with me. And I shared this last time I spoke at an AG meeting, but there was a time when I spent a lot of time just pushing my kids around my neighborhood to try to get them to sleep because all they wanted to do was like nurse or cry for like the first 2 years. And I started this meditation where I would go through the alphabet and I would say people's names. So I would be like Aviva, Bonnie, Christine, Devra, Eddie, you know, and I would go through, and by the end of this little alphabet meditation, I would feel like everybody was with me. But so I book a trip, so because the doctor says, yeah, if you want to see your mom, you better go. And so I book a plane trip for the next day, and I had a layover in Chicago, and this is an amazing story to me because it's the power of AA. And I'm sitting in my seat, and I told my husband, I started to have those feelings, and I started to feel like, you know what, Mom, I'm not going to do this again. Like, I have a life now, and, you know, I have, you know, rearranged, I have shown up for you one too many times, and this time, you know, if I get to Chicago and that layover, and I want to turn around and go home, I can, because this is just too much. I have kids. You know, blah, 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 blah. Resentment, resentment, resentment. And thank God I have a sober hand, you know, with a sober dialing abilities. And I have Ava on the speed dial. And they're, like, telling me to shut the phone off. And I call her. And she says, uh-oh, sounds like you have a resentment. So I get out my little notebook, which I always carry a little notebook. And I do my columns. And I write out the resentment of my mom for being, you know, being in a coma, being on life support, fear she's going to die, fear she's not going to die, you know? And then I fell asleep because it lifted. And the next, I get there, and my sister and I drove across the state to be with her, and we got to help her die. And, you know, it was weird. I was just going to say it was a great experience, but, you know, I stayed up with my mom. We had to make those decisions, like taking her off life support. I read the big book to her. You know, which part I read to her was, the banker watched me whirl fat checks in and out of his till with amusement because he loved, she and I used to laugh at Bill and like that incredible ego. I prayed the third step with her and the seventh step. And, you know, I remember reading this beautiful essay of Dr. Silkworth's, and he talked about how we really work with people and we go the distance with people. And, you know, I didn't really mention that, but I'm so fortunate to have sponsored and to get to gotten to a lot of people have helped me feel enormously useful. And that's like all I ever wanted in my life was to feel like I was of some use to somebody. So Dr. Silkworth talked about, you know, oftentimes people get sober, but sometimes the biggest service we can do to people is taking that final walk with them. Now I always think of that, you know, and I remember asking, you know, this chaplain to what I could pray for, and I asked Ava, I said, what do I pray for? And the chaplain told me to pray for mercy, and that's exactly what we got. And I found, you know, in this program that, you know, it's a much more merciful, loving God than I think in my mind, you know. And there's just so much more love for you, for me, than I ever could have imagined. And Ava told me that one time we were on the phone recently, and she said, there's more love for you than you could, you know, than you could even imagine. And and you know, I'm so grateful. I'm just so grateful to be in AA and to, you know, have the opportunity to keep coming to meetings and to keep learning about you and to keep getting those new, hard, interesting life experiences. And you know, and to be able to see all of you still here and still excited and pretending to be excited even if you're not excited, and to be practicing smiling and showing up And I'm an alcoholic. My name's Heidi, and I love you very much. Thanks.